back to Let's Take It From the Top. I am your host, Hallie Mastro-Berardino, here with another incredible episode. My guest today is Chris Clark. Chris is originally from Plano, Texas, and he attended Texas State University, where he earned his BFA in musical theater. For those of you who don't know Chris, I want to read to you the special skills section of his resume because it's going to give you an idea of how incredible he is. So here it is. Guitar, partnering, juggling, can balance objects on chin, trapeze, stage combat, football, basketball, baseball, snowboarding, and basic Spanish. All of those things are just a small glimpse into the multitude of talents that Chris has, which he has used in productions of Cabaret and Ragtime while at school, in Pippin, where he flew on the trapeze with the woman who played Bertha at Music Theater Wichita. And today we're going to sit down and talk all about his journey with the Escape to Margaritaville National Tour, where he led the company playing Tully. I'm so excited for you guys to get to know Chris and for us to hear his story and his experience while leading this national tour. Without further ado, here's Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Hallie.
How are ya?
I'm doing good. Making it through this time. Happy to be here.
Good. And so where are you right now?
I am currently in Plano, Texas. It's a suburb of Dallas. It's where I grew up.
And is your whole family is home?
Just my mom and dad. I actually have a twin brother who in the spring moved into his own place. So it's just me and my parents and my dogs.
Cool. I'm in like the same boat. Well, I'm so excited to sit down and chat with you about your experience on the national tour of Escape to Margaritaville. I like think back to, so your senior showcase, I was in Pearl Studios that day. And I think back to that day of seeing you and how crazy. I can remember walking in the hallway. I was leaving. I was coming from an audition and you were singing and I like peeked in through the curtain and it was so good. Before we start to like go off on a tangent about that, let's officially begin. Okay. I think we're ready. Let's
here we go.
Take it from the top.
Woo!
Awesome. So let's take it from the top. How did you hear about this audition? What got you in the room?
So this all starts before it starts. Let's really take it from the top. In March of 2019, I was at rehearsal for a show that I was doing in college, and I saw a playbill listing for the role of Tully in Escape to Margaritaville. At the time, I was like, is that Tully? Is it Tully? I don't know how you say this character's name. And I saw they were doing a national tour to cast the role. Like Bender Casting went to Austin, Texas and Nashville and Los Angeles. And they were trying to find a non-union actor to lead this non-union tour. And I saw it and it fit all of the things that I do. It was like hunky leading man, plays guitar. And I said, okay, that's what I do. But he's a rock tenor. And I am a baritone baritenor, if we're being generous. And I was like, that's just not for me. I can't do it. That's how I heard of it. And they were going to have their final callbacks in April. And then I got an email from Bender Casting asking me to submit for it. But I had to be at final callbacks in April. But that was when we were in tech for the show I was in at school. So I didn't do it. And then, so months later in May, I did Senior Showcase at Pearl Studios. You were there. And Chad Murnane from Bender was at our first showing of it because we did three that day at Pearl. And I got an email right after that said, hey, we're trying to find this person. It's May at this point. So a month after the final callbacks were scheduled to be. And they were trying to find this role. And they sent me the packet. And I said, I might as well. It's a little high for me, but I might as well. And I, in 2 days, put together the material. I think it was three scenes, two songs. And one of those tricky ones of song in the middle of a scene where you have to kind of do it all in one take. And it's a 5 minute long video. One of those. I did one take of that one. And I had to play guitar for the audition. I was in New York for Showcase, so I didn't have my instruments. So of course I put out a big notice to anyone in New York, like, I need a guitar. And I was staying at my cousin's house in Queens, and his dad had a Martin backpacker guitar. It's kind of like a lute. It has a fretboard, but it has like a V body shape, and it weighs about 3 pounds. I brought it into an audition, and somebody's like, what is that instrument? Is that a guitar? What is that? I said, it is. It's a backpacker. So it fits in a little backpack and a sling. It doesn't look like a guitar. And I filmed it on this video with Nick Eibler.
Nick is a mutual friend of mine and Chris's, and he will be a guest in the future on Let's Take It From the Top.
Yeah. So we met up, and I was there to help him run prom stuff. Then I filmed my sides. I sent it in. The next week, I went in for the original Broadway director, Christopher Ashley, our tour director, Amy Corcoran, the tour choreographer, Andrew Turteltaub, who is Kelly Devine's associate on Broadway, and producer Beth Williams, casting, the whole thing. And I didn't have the guitar anymore. So then I did it with a piano and just had to pretend like I was on a bandstand playing guitar. And I did it. That was Friday, May 31st. I flew back home to Texas on June 1st. And on Monday, June 3rd, I got the call that I got the part.
Wow.
And it was wild. And we negotiated from there. And they lowered the keys for me, which was incredible. Like, they truly made it to where it fit my voice to a T. And that's the abridged version of how Margaritaville came to happen.
Wow. That's so cool. And I know, I actually don't think I heard the story of your experience from you, but the thing that I remember is how they were like, we love this person so much, and we're going to do whatever we have to do to make it fit for you. And I think, like, that is such a unique experience and is so, so cool.
For sure. We had our music supervisor, Christopher Yonke, he basically did the Broadway arrangements along with Jimmy Buffett's arranger, Michael Utley. And it's important for me that you get a visual image of what this man looks like. Shaggy hair, black V-neck, shark tooth necklace, goatee. That's Chris Yonke. And he would always say, dude, you don't have to be Nolan, bro. Paul Nolan, the original Tully. He's like, dude, stop trying to be Nolan, bro. Just go up there, be you. Don't want you to be Nolan. And I was like, all right, fine. Which was just amazing that it felt like the tour was truly just the last stage in the development of this show. Like, it went off Broadway, pre-Broadway tour, Broadway. They learned things along the way and then said, okay, the tour, we're making it this cast. Like, they didn't pigeonhole anyone into what Broadway did. And it was awesome.
Let's think, how long was it between getting the call that you got the role and starting rehearsal? And in that time, what did you have to do to get ready?
That's a great question, because I had a really interesting summer last year. So I got the call on June 3rd, and I started rehearsal August 27th in New York. And in between that time, on June 8th, Jimmy Buffett had a concert in Dallas. And they were like, we want to send you to the concert and meet Jimmy, because I never met him. So I took my parents and my brother, and we went backstage, and we got to hang out in this little, like, party area. And we met Jimmy, and it was at the same venue that my dad went to a Jimmy Buffett concert 3 days after I was born. And my parents are Jimmy Buffett fans. And so it was so cool to, like, bring them to that same venue and be like, these are my parents. And so we have pictures there. And so that's a small little, I mean, it was definitely the first, like, what's going on in my life? The whole summer, I read that script. I typically play characters that are your Gastons and your Lancelots and your big bravado leading men. And this is a slacker beach bum guitar player, but is also the leading man of the show. And so that was a foreign territory. I read Jimmy Buffett's books, because he has 2 best-selling novels, to kind of get inside his head and see that Margaritaville lifestyle. I played guitar a ton. I played more guitar last summer than I probably did in the previous 4 years of my life. I bought a Jimmy Buffett guitar anthology. I learned the music. I got it in my voice. But the coolest thing I did is they sent me to what I call Bar Singer Boot Camp. I went to Isla Morada in the Florida Keys for 4 days and then 3 days. They sent me in July, and I flew to Miami and drove a car down to Isla Morada and worked with a guitar teacher on some of the songs and kind of bar singing vibe and technique. And he showed me all these different resorts that they based the Margaritaville resort in the show off of. And just kind of showed me how to interact with people. And just, I got to see what it was like to be a bar singer in Florida. And I got to do that twice. And it really taught me so much. And that was huge. I based my character off of one of the guys I met that was truly just a Tully roaming around in real life in the Florida Keys. And that was bar singer boot camp. It was awesome.
Very
cool. It was so cool.
Cool. Let's talk about rehearsals. What was it like first day?
First day, it was so surreal. Rehearsals were at Pearl Studios in New York. And to see that poster, I guess, out front, and then have all the cast come in, and to get that script and that folder and the tour handbook, and meet the people from the production company and our company manager, and kind of really see everything that was going into this and be like, this is actually happening. Okay. And we got in the room and we did some music. And I remember Ensemble was learning music. And I went to one of the other rooms that was our main staging room. And the floor was taped out. And the chairs were set up for the way that the bars were set up. Just like in the promos, just like in the bootleg. I walked in the room and it was like, I'm at my bar. Like, this is my stage. This is Tully's world. And it was a really cool feeling to feel that sense of awe of, I'm in a Broadway show. Like, this is what I saw on Broadway, and now I'm in it. And it was the same thing that week of learning the choreography to the finale and the opening number. Was, I watched Paul Nolan do this so many times, and now I'm being taught it, and I'm gonna do it. And it was very overwhelming in a sense of, I'm leading a tour, oh my gosh, can I do this? And also, this is everything I've ever wanted, this is amazing. And so it was a, you know, that balancing that imposter syndrome with, wow, this is so cool, and I understand how incredible this is.
Yeah.
That was like my first week, basically.
I just got chills. You were like, I'm in a Broadway show. I feel like that's the dream, you know what I mean? To walk in the room and be like, this is really happening.
I would always joke, I would say, it's like we're in the video. Like, there was, I understand that this is getting ahead a little bit, but when we teched the show in Providence, I remember there was a moment where I was in the costume for the first time and I have the guitar. There's Paul Nolan playing this Martin guitar with a mermaid on it. And I've got that guitar in my hand. It was in a Jimmy Buffett exhibit at the Martin Guitar Museum. And then we got them back for the show, and it has the mermaid, and I'm playing it, and I'm up on the bar, and there's lighting, and we're shooting B-roll. And I was like, it's like we're in the video.
So let's talk a little bit of what that rehearsal process was like. So you started with music and eventually starts getting to choreography. How long were you in the studios in New York?
We were in the studio for, I think, 3.5 weeks. Okay. We had our first day on August 27th, and we left on September 20th. I have a weird thing with dates. I can remember these landmark dates. And I understand this is very common, especially in the summer stock world, too, is we were a lot of times very much ensemble in this room, learning dance and staging, leads in this room with a director, doing blocking and doing scenes and doing book work. So it was very strange sometimes when we were meeting the ensemble, because they kind of had their whole little thing going on. And then the 7 principal roles were off with the director, and we came in, and it was just very, it was a weird thing to figure out. It wasn't awkward, but it was just like, oh, wow, we've been doing different things, and now we're piecing it together. And
right. They
did the opening number, and then they plugged me into it. And they're like, you need to be at this spot at this time, or else you're going to hit that person. And so I'm just running around, and I had to learn it without the guitar first. I would always tell people say that musical theater is like the pat your head, rub your tummy kind of thing. But playing Tully is doing that while hula hooping, and you can't hit anyone with a hula hoop. The hula hoop is the guitar. It is like attached to me. It has a big old neck. I am constantly slinging it over my shoulder and bringing it down and running through people, and people are doing like head whips. And if there's a guitar neck in their way, they're going to hit their head or they're going to whack their hand, which happened many times. So juggling that was hard. Learning the role is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. After doing it over 100 times, it became second nature, but learning it was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, because I am doing the normal things of trying to listen, respond, know my lines, know my lyrics. But then I also have this other part of my brain that's going, what chord's here? Where do my fingers go? What's going on? Where does the guitar go? What part of the song are we in? Also acting. And it took a while.
Well, it's funny. My intro to this episode, I read your special skill section of your resume for everyone, because as much as I'm sure that was difficult, if someone was like, okay, who can play this role that also plays a guitar, that is also a good actor, that can also sing the music, I'd be like, oh, Chris Clark. Like, so.
Oh, you're so kind.
As difficult as it absolutely was for you, I'm sure that you carried all of those parts of that role so wonderfully. So
you are so kind. Thank you. There was one of the songs that I sang, because I think there were 13 songs that I sang in, not always like 13 full ones, but there's kind of like Mamma Mia. There's a bunch of little mashups of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I would play guitar in 10 of those songs. And even in those mashups, they're constantly changing keys. So I have to know what key is here, what key's there. And so one of the songs I played was Son of a Sailor, and I underscored myself before I sang it. So I went into a monologue, and then I started the underscore, and I have to have it end at a certain time, and then I come in. And my co-lead, her name is Sarah Hendrickson, she's amazing. People would say, where's Chris? And he's like, he's off playing Son of a Sailor somewhere. Because I was just trying to get that in my fingers so I couldn't forget it. And yeah, anytime I had a down moment outside of the room with my score in front of me, trying to learn the key changes and learn and getting those chords ingrained, because it was a process, but it was great.
That's awesome. So then let's move to, finished rehearsing in the studio, and what was it like for teching the show? Where did you go first? What was that kind of like?
We teched the show in Providence, Rhode Island at the Providence Performing Arts Center. It's a very popular launch point because it's so close to New York. I think it's like a 3 to 4 hour drive away, and their whole green room is dedicated to wall tags of shows that have teched there. I go in and I see the Evita tour that I saw when I was in high school opened there, and the Band's Visit tour, and there's Patty Murin's name on the wall, and Wicked's come through here a bunch, and Hamilton. And it's like, oh, wow, we're one of these shows. I mean, we're Escape to Margaritaville. I'm not going to act like I don't understand what our show is. It's a fun, frothy time. We haven't won a Pulitzer. I'll leave it there. But it was a big moment of, wow, this is happening. You know, all these people that I had been in a rehearsal studio in Midtown Manhattan with, we get on a bus, we go to Providence, and we take that first breath of non-New York air. And it was like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And we were at a hotel for like 2 weeks, and we walked to the theater. We teched it for, I think, the first week, just adding tech and costumes and mics. And that was a big adjustment for me, because for the first half of tour, I had 4 wireless pieces of equipment on my body. I had 2 mics. They were worn on like an ear, a little like Britney Spears setup. Mm-hmm. And then I had another pack that had my in-ear monitors that was strapped into my mic belt and ran up and went in my ears. And then I also had the wireless mic on the guitar. So I was like a mashup of radio waves.
Yeah.
And the in-ears were a huge adjustment at first, because I wasn't used to that soundscape. And so for like that first week of tech, I was flat. Like, I knew these songs for the last 4 months of my life, and now I wasn't singing them on pitch, and I did not know what was going on. And it's because that whole sound thing was different. I had the band, I had the guitar, I had me, and they were mixing it. So that was a big adjustment curve. But walking into that theater for the first time and seeing the island up there and just seeing the blue floor and our set and the bandstand and meeting our band for the first time, because our band traveled with us everywhere. We didn't have just two or three and then hire locals. It was our 7-member band, and getting to hear them and do our sits probe. And we did B-roll in Providence and shot with Matthew Murphy, who of course is one of the top Broadway photographers. And it was just another moment of, how did I get here? This is so cool. And I don't mean a name drop. It's just truly, I mean it in a way of, I recognize how incredible it all was. It was like, this is ridiculous. One thing I do want to say that was really cool about this is that we had our writers, Mike O'Malley and Greg Garcia, with us from Pearl through Tech. So we were constantly getting rewrites, which is strange in a show that was on Broadway and is now on tour. They were constantly cutting pages, trying out jokes, adding lines, because they are sitcom writers. That's how they work. They write jokes, they pitch a joke, they see if it works. And so that was an interesting hurdle that doesn't normally happen on tours of shows that were on Broadway. Right. And so that was a Tech thing. We finally froze our show. And we opened in Providence, Rhode Island. It was cool. It was my first time in Rhode Island.
It's funny that you mentioned the rewrites happening from rehearsals all the way to Tech. I have a friend who was in the national tour of SpongeBob, and the same sort of thing happened.
Really?
And yeah, and I can remember being like, I saw that show on Broadway. What did they have to fix? But they had the original director, the writers were like involved, and to see how it's always evolving is really cool. Like, I've talked to people about shows that are so iconic and still realizing, even if the words aren't changing, how the message can change as time goes on, and how things can sort of morph and become something new depending on when it's done. But that's a cool thing to realize about theater in general, about how it changes. That's
also so cool about SpongeBob, because we always felt like we were in it together a little bit, in terms that we were the two non-union tours that were going out, that were playing the big houses. Yeah. And so we would hear, well, this is happening on SpongeBob. Well, this is happening here. And so it always felt like we were kind of synced up and in that same world. So that's really interesting that we had similar processes.
Let's talk about tour life. What was it like? Is there like one place that you went, or a couple places you went, that are like, that was the best?
Yes. So I do want to say a quick thing. Starting in March of 2019, I started developing signs of an autoimmune condition that like caused my eye to flare up. And I spent the end of my senior year almost always wearing sunglasses because I was sensitive to light, and my lower back flared up, and I developed a bone spur in my toe, which I had surgery on in the summer before starting Margaritaville. I had plantar fasciitis so bad. And it was kind of under control. And then starting our second week of rehearsal, my foot was just inflamed beyond belief. I couldn't walk. Walking the few blocks it took me to get to rehearsal was painful. I was constantly on my feet. They got me orthotics for all my shoes. And I had like really fancy flip-flops because my shoes were just such an issue. I mean, my feet. And I joke, people say that they keep their Madukas from their first tours and shows. Well, I have a pair of flip-flops and insoles. Uh-huh. So that's my little win there. But I couldn't really walk on tour, which is really tricky. A really, really fun thing is that I got a 225-pound weight-bearing Razor scooter that I rode around the houses and I rode around cities, because what I was discovering was that it was the articulating motion of my foot that was pissing it off. So that to say, I remember in the Little Rock, there was a moment where I couldn't walk to the water cooler, but I was constantly taking medication, which, yikes, when you're singing that much, I was alternating between Tylenol, Advil, Meloxicam, Ketorolac, like trying so many things to get the inflammation in my foot down to do the show, which would immediately inflame my foot. And then I would go home and ice it and spend the rest of that whole next day trying to get the inflammation down so I could do my job. So that was terrible. I'll be honest. That part sucked. So unfortunately, I always say, like, I wasn't able to go to Disney World. I wasn't able to go to Disneyland, to Yosemite, to go to the beach as often as I would like, to really be a tourist to the max in the places I was, because I only had so much currency on my feet is the best way that I can explain it. Like I only had so much currency a day. And if I was on my feet more than I needed to be, I couldn't do the show. So I want to say that briefly, and that I realized that that really did cast a shadow over my tour experience, because I wasn't able to do it to the fullest. It's figured out now. I'll say we finally diagnosed it. I got medicine. It's back. So when this industry resumes, I'll be able to do stuff. Okay. So that's my little side note that I have to say about my foot, because it really just messed up a lot of stuff for me.
Yeah.
But my favorite places, Fayetteville, Arkansas, is one of my favorite places we were. It was amazing. It's a college town. It felt like San Marcos, Texas, where I went to school. And we had a hotel that had kitchens in it, which was great. You learn that there's basic criteria for if you're going to like a place. It's like, hotel, is it clean? What does it have? Do we have rental cars? Is there food around? How's the venue? Is it nice? Is there water? Are there a ton of stairs? So you kind of learn things, and Fayetteville checked all of the boxes. The crowds were awesome. It's Buffett country. You know, it's Arkansas. One show, the first three rows were just Buffett fans that had tailgated prior to our show and were singing all of the words at us, which was hilarious, distracting, and awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Fort Lauderdale was so cool. We were there for 2 weeks. Amazing theater. We spent our golden day, our day off, on the beach in November, which I thought I escaped the cold for another year. I am in Florida in November, early December, and it was perfect. Denver, Colorado for 2 weeks was beautiful. Yeah, it's crazy to sit back and think all the places I got to do the show, because at the time it was, yeah, I travel for a living. I'm in this city and then I'm in this city. And now I look back and I think, Orlando, Washington, D.C., Spokane, Washington, Denver, Los Angeles. What is going on? Yeah, it's weird to think now, you know, in quarantine, we've just kind of been in the same place for so long that it's so weird to think that things change so quickly.
Yeah, I feel like that's everyone's dream. Being now that we're stuck, it's like, oh, what I would kill to go and travel around different places safely.
Right. Yeah. And now that I can actually move around, I'm so excited for whenever my next tour is, whether it is this show or a different one, to actually be able to enjoy it. And you know, there were some really small things, like when I was in Denver on our day off, we went up into the mountains and we went tubing. And like I mentioned, there was the beach, and it was always fun when we were in someone's home city, because their parents would throw us a party, and we would have these get-togethers. And you know, especially now in these times where we're so isolated, it's like remembering that community is just the best.
So let's talk about the end of the tour, which obviously at the time we probably didn't know that it was the end of the tour. Like, where were you, and what was that experience like?
Yes, let's do it. This story starts on March 8th. And we had just finished 3 weeks at the Dolby Theater in Los Angeles. Big dream. Jimmy Buffett was there at opening night. He was there at our second to last show. So this last Sunday, I play Margaritaville with Jimmy Buffett on stage. My mom is in the audience.
Oh.
That night, her and my aunts come and they see the show. Monday, we get on a plane, we fly from LA to Denver to bus to a show, a one-nighter in Pueblo, Colorado. So our tour was very interesting, because sometimes we had 3 weeks in Los Angeles, 2 weeks in Fort Lauderdale, and other times we were playing five cities in a week. So it was a mix. And so we flew to Pueblo for one show on Wednesday, March 11th. Which you were about to hear is one day before the infamous day of March 12th.
Yeah.
And we did one show in Pueblo, Colorado. It was awesome, because one-nighters are always awesome. People get so excited for it. It's the one night it's coming. It's amazing. I had gotten a haircut that day, so I was in a good mood. I remember it well. I just remember we started it. There were college kids. I got backstage and I was like, guys, Pueblo loves it. They love it. So we had that show in Pueblo on Wednesday, and then we were going to have shows in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Thursday, Friday, two Saturday, two Sunday, before flying to Georgia for another week of split weeks. And we got on the bus Thursday morning, March 12th, and at 11 o'clock, right before our lunch stop, we were told that our week in Albuquerque had been canceled. Then we go to our lunch stop. I remember I texted a mutual friend of ours, Jake Smith, and I was like, hey, what's the deal with Frozen? What's going on there? And he said, you know, like, we'll probably know more in like 2 weeks. We don't really know. And then an hour later, Playbill, Broadway.com, everything was like, Broadway shut down until April 12th, which seemed like forever at the time. It was like a month with none of this. And now, of course, it's August.
Right.
But it was wild. And we were all just kind of on the bus, just dumbfounded. But we were still going to Albuquerque, and we were going to stay there for that week because at the time, our next week had been intact. We were going to go fly to Georgia, do a show in Athens, Columbus, a weekend in Huntsville, before then going to Appleton, Wisconsin for a week. Mm-hmm. So our itinerary at the moment had still been intact. So we were going to stay in Albuquerque so that we could fly as a company there. The next day in Albuquerque, we found out that Huntsville had canceled. Mm-hmm. But they were still going to keep us there because of our one-nighters. And then we were still going to go to Huntsville and just sit in Huntsville for the weekend so they could fly us to Appleton. So in an effort to keep all this intact, we were still there. And of course, at this time, we're getting updates from SpongeBob, from Waitress, from Bandstand, because, you know, those are the other non-act tours. And we were kind of seeing that what they're going to do is probably what we're going to do. And the next day, we were told that Appleton had canceled and they were going to send us home for 2 weeks. We were going to fly to Fort Myers, Florida for our week starting March 31st, which I was excited about because that was the start of baseball season. And I was going to go to see the Yankees play the Rays. But I do remember thinking in Albuquerque, this will probably be about 4 weeks. Like, it'll probably be the length of the Broadway shutdown. And then we'll get back in late April, May, and get going. And I flew home back to Plano, Texas on Sunday, March 15th, a week after performing on the Dolby stage with Jimmy Buffett. Mm-hmm. And I've been here ever since.
Yeah.
And since then, it's kind of been a cluster of guesses. You know, I think a lot of people that don't understand the turbulent nature of our industry in terms of even under stable circumstances of, I don't know if I got this job, and, you know, actually not getting a good callback that you don't get the job in is actually a win. Like, that's all you can do. And people don't understand that not having that concrete, you got the job success, that you don't have to have that kind of thing for success. Those people are, you know, when do you start again? When are you back on the road? And, you know, for a while I would say, well, we're supposed to go back April 27th. And then it was mid-May, and then it was early June, and then it was early July, and then it was August, and then it was December of 2020, and now I'm hearing maybe February of 2021. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like a guess at this point. And yeah, we don't know. It just went so quick. Yeah. It's all just guesses.
Right. And I definitely have gotten the Broadway still not open. And I'm like, nope. And then you'll get, well, when is it supposed to come back? And you're like, well, January, but probably March, maybe. It's like all a big old question mark.
And I always hear people say, I can't wait for 2021. Like, this year just needs to be over. And I think, what's going to happen when the calendar changes? Mm-hmm. Is there something that I don't know about that, like, 2021 hits and all of a sudden viruses are gone?
Right.
But yeah, that's kind of how quick it happened. And I guess, in, you know, a little update on that is, what's wonderful is the producers are committed to bringing it back, or at least, I won't say committed, I don't mean to hold them to that, but they have been very adamant that they would like to bring it back and that regional houses want it. So, you know, I hopefully there's a job for me to go back to when things resume, which is wonderful. I'm so grateful for that. But yeah, that's kind of the weird state of how quickly it all happened and where things went. And
yeah.
Yeah.
obviously this has come up in conversation a lot when I've talked to other people, and it sort of just has to end in that question mark, because it's not like you don't have an answer, I don't have an answer, no one has an answer. But yeah, it's crazy. I feel like I never envisioned a world where it didn't exist, and now that we're here, I'm like, okay. I still don't know what that's like.
Right. And now it's hard to see, okay, well, in this world that does exist now, how can we then bring back this industry that, you know, people still want? People want to be entertained. They want to hear stories. We see it here in Texas, you know, people want to go out. People want to go to the theater and be in that communal place and hear a story together. And I think there is still a place for Escape to Margaritaville in this world. It's not the best show I've ever been in, but it is so fun. If you let it be, man, I get to wear Hawaiian shirts and flip-flops and sing Jimmy Buffett songs for a living. You're going to have so much fun, and that audience is going to have so much fun. And ultimately, that's what people are at that show for. Right. People aren't there to watch the bands visit. Like, because Escape to Margaritaville is really fun escapism, and there is still a reason for it. And especially in this world right now where stakes are high across the board, it would be nice to be able to go to Margaritaville for 2.5 hours and have a margarita, get that license to chill. I sound like I'm doing an interview for our show right now, but yeah. And so that's what's cool about that show, is I think it's going to be really fun to perform it if I get to, when things resume, because the world is different than we left it. Mm-hmm. And I'm a different human than when I left it, which makes me a different actor than when I left it. You know, I think it would sometimes be easy to get bogged down, and we're getting vulnerable, in the material that I was doing, and know that some people at the show were going to hate it, and to feel like no matter what I did, people are going to hate it, and they were going to hate me. Like, you know, which goes back to that imposter syndrome of like, can I do this? Can I lead this show? I'm 23 years old. Like, I'll own it. It's crazy. And there were times where I would feel that pressure and know people paid top dollar tour ticket prices to come to this show. I just did a Friday night, 2 Saturday and a Sunday mat. It's the last show of our week. I'm tired, but I have to let my brain go back to square one, take it from the top. Like, I have to take it from the top and commit to going through this journey that my character is about to go through. And of course, it's not like I'm Marius and Les Mis. I don't lose people I love, but I do have to commit to this story that is silly and fun and frothy. I think some people would say that show's stupid. It's not stupid. It's silly. It is self-aware, silly, mm-hmm. in the best way. Like, people like Rick and Morty, people like SpongeBob. It's silly. And sometimes it would be really hard to do that on days that you're tired. But I know where I was going with that, is that having had this time now, I will never take that for granted.
Yep. Like, that's what I was going to say. You, like, looking back and remembering those days where it was hard, now I'm like, I will never complain about anything having to do with being fatigued or not wanting to do the show. I feel like that, I'm sure yeah. every single actor, performer, musical person is like, yeah, no, I'm never going to do that ever again.
Yes, I will cherish every Saturday matinee. I will cherish every one-nighter. I mean, who knows, there might be a dresser that's like, that guy wasn't cool, but I will be just an absolute angel to every backstage person, be like, thank you for being here, I'm so glad that we are at work today. And I think when I did the show, I remember so many matinees going off stage, and I didn't wear a shirt for a lot of our show, and that made me very self-conscious as like a previous fat kid. And like, I put on weight very easily, and I was having to eat super restrictive on the road because I thought I had to look a certain way. And I will say as a side note, in this time I've learned, no, I don't. Like, why did I think that? As long as I'm happy and healthy and can do this show. So this time has been wonderful because I can walk now and I have a healthier body image, which is fantastic. So I'm leaving stage to go to get like a mic set up. I'm running in flip-flops. My foot hurts. And I was like, yep, this is that same thing that I've done 125 times. here we go. I'm tired just looking at the ensemble, like, here we go again. And I think about that now. I'm like, dang, that's amazing. I was on a stage with crew members, and there were lights in the wings, and I had a microphone on my body, and I was making money, and I was playing the lead in a show, and I was singing Jimmy Buffett songs that I grew up listening to and grew up loving, and now it's my job. I'm singing Fins and 5 o'clock Somewhere in Margaritaville and Volcano on a stage and getting paid for it, for a thing that I went to college for. And to think about that now and be like, man, that is incredible. And after doing it for months, it, even though I knew it wasn't, it just felt like, it felt like the normal, like this is what it was. And, you know, I had friends in New York that were on the audition circuit, and I would have to remind myself, Chris, don't you not be grateful for a second. Like, you have a job right now. It is amazing. And you are performing on a stage for a living. You are the 4-year-old kid that wanted to do dance class and did a dance called Teddy Bear Picnic. We'll never forget. Just because you got to be on a stage. And you're on one professionally. So, you know, I look back on that and I'm like, man, I will never take that for granted in the future, because that was so cool.
Chris, I think you just answered like every follow-up question that like went through my mind as you were speaking. You would like answer it as it was coming up. So,
oh, I'm so glad. I just ranted. I'm so glad. Gratitude rant. There we go.
No, that's awesome. And I think that's something that so many people are going to be able to relate to, in that this time has allowed us to find a new gratitude for what we did and the opportunities that we were given then. And it also makes me think, like, I know people like Rob McClure have posted on Instagram of like, the day that it comes back, the day that we get to be on stage again is going to be just like the most incredible thing ever. Because we're all feeling that I am ready to go back even better than I was before. Like, that I can't even wait for when that happens.
I know. You just gave me chills. It's going to be so cool. Whatever it is, it's going to be awesome.
All right, Chris. I think we've taken it from the top to the bottom. We covered it all.
Oh, good.
I can't thank you enough for being vulnerable and being open and sharing your experiences with us. It was just incredible.
It was so fun. Like I said, I'm so glad to share, you know, that it was hot, that there was some really, really high highs and some really, really hard lows. And I wasn't grateful all the time. And sometimes it was really hard to, and, you know, I watched your video and you were like, this is for that high school theater kid. And like, I was that high school theater kid. And I know that it's easy to watch like Broadway.com blogs and be like, man, that's amazing. That's so, for lack of a better word, easy. Like, I just get to do what I want to do and it's work. But definitely in this time now, like I can own that I wasn't always the best cast member, but I know that I want to be in the future. And that this time has been so great to want to be able to come back to it the best I can.
Absolutely.
And I am grateful to get to talk about it.
Yes. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Chris.
Thanks, Hallie.
You guys, that conversation I had with Chris filled me with so much joy and gratitude, and I hope it did the same for you. I cannot thank Chris enough. If you want to follow Chris on social media, you can do so on Instagram at ChrisClark55 or on Twitter at ChrisMClark55. I encourage you to reach out to me as well on my personal Instagram, the Let's Take It From The Top Instagram, or the Let's Take It From The Top email, all of which can be found in the show notes for today's episode. I recently was featured as a guest on Matthew Carey's podcast, which is called Studio Time. On his podcast, he encourages his listeners to send this episode that you're listening to right now to a friend that you think would enjoy it, and I want to take on the same challenge and give it to you, the Let's Take It From The Top listeners. So, if you have someone in mind who you think would love this episode and enjoy it just as much as I hope you did, please feel free to share it with them. Well, I think that brings us to the end of yet another incredible episode. I hope that part of you that is that little theater lover is just filled to the brim. I'm going to be sure to be leading with gratitude for the rest of my day, and I hope you all do the same. I'll see you next time on Let's Take It From The Top.